back to the Blue Bench. My name's Georgia Hawthorne, and I'm the social media manager for the Montana Democratic Party.
And I'm Shannon O'Brien, former senator, former school teacher, and statewide candidate.
Well, as everyone knows, there is so much going on right now on the state level, the national level, the global level, that simply we can't keep track of all of it. But we are going to do a special deep dive for you guys today into the governor's vetoes. And this is actually going to be Shannon's last episode. Cue my sad face here. So she's going to be the star of the show today.
Thanks, Georgie. I will be moving on. Stay tuned for more information there. And at the risk of sounding so hokey, I do want you to know that it has been a great honor to be invited into your ear or into your sight for those of you that watch. Over the course of these last, well, I started up in January and with the team and we've had some great fun. I think we've had some positive impact, of significance. And, if I leave you with anything, I hope you hear this, while on the one hand, one of the things that I say to my teenager is this too shall pass. Whether it's good or bad or not, whatever, this too shall pass. But in this situation, what we're going through as Democrats in a rural state, we have a voice. And so this too shall pass one way or another, but it will pass for the better if we stay engaged, if we're involved and use our voice. And if you're one of those people that hasn't used your voice, this is the time. Whether that's writing letters to the editor to your local newspaper, finding your local Democratic Central Committee and reaching out to them, send us an email at Georgia
at
MontanaDemocrats.org. And you'll be hearing more about how to stay involved directly with the governor's office and how to have a voice in the legislature and in Congress. So thanks for letting us be a part of your lives.
All right, my legislative queen, are you ready to rock?
Ready to rock. And I'm going to start today. Today's all very different, but I'm going to start today with two documents. I'm going to call them two sacred documents.
I like it.
We have the Constitution of the United States. And if you take a peek at this, it's not, I mean, it's look how thin it is. And it's not rocket science. So thumbing through this at some point in time, you can order one online or go to your local bookstore or library and you can get one. Take a look at this one. But I also want to show you the Montana State Constitution. And I'll share a little story. Many years ago, I was trying to kill time on a drive with my son, who was then, I'm going to say, maybe 10 years old. And I did want to memorize the preamble of the Montana Constitution because it's not that long. And it's worthy of understanding where the people in 1972 who were elected to draft up this Constitution, where they were coming from and what they agreed on, where they saw eye to eye. And I love this preamble. And as Georgie and I discovered shortly before recording, I don't still have it memorized. I did at one point in time.
She tried really hard.
I tried really hard, but I had my son years ago in the back seat with this, and he and I was trying to recite it, and he thought it was like the funniest thing ever when mom messed up. So little did he know, I was teaching him the preamble of the Montana Constitution. I was one step ahead. So I'm going to have Georgie be my guide. And I'm going to try to share, and she's going to pick up where I left off, so that this isn't too agonizing for you. But I want you to think about these words, and if there's anything specific that resonates, just notice that. So we'll start with, We the people of Montana, grateful to God for the quiet beauty of our state, the grandeur of our mountains, and the vastness of our rolling plains.
And desiring
to improve the quality of life. Securing liberties? No.
Equality of opportunity.
Equality of opportunity.
And to secure the blessings of liberty for this and future generations, do ordain and establish this Constitution.
It's very simple. It's very simple, but it's also, I think, monumental as a foundation for Republicans and Democrats and independents and Green Party and everyone who doesn't feel like they belong in politics, but they do because it's democracy and we need everyone. But I encourage you to think about that. And then it goes through and explains how our state government works. So this is one of my favorite documents. That's enough for show and tell. Now, let's get into these vetoes.
Let's do it.
Okay. So we're in veto season right now for the legislature and the governor. And essentially what's happening right now is the governor is vetoing bills. And if the governor vetoes a bill that had more than a 2/3 vote, Secretary of State mm-hmm. automatically sends a ballot with the letter, the veto letter from the governor with the explanation of why he vetoed it. Mm-hmm. And then a ballot to all legislators who have the opportunity to override the veto or not. It's a simple yes, no. And a number of days to get that back in. And so we are still waiting to see if there are any overrides yet, but I have a handful of bills that I'm really, I'll just say perplexed, interested in why the governor chose to veto them. Mm-hmm. Last week, we talked about Senator Cora Newman, who had a bill for first responders. Firefighters are the ones that I shared that I'm close to because I have a family of firefighters that addressed PTSD. Mm-hmm. For firefighters and first responders. It makes PTSD workman's comp eligible.
Okay, so their work would pay for it.
That's right.
Is that how workers' comp works?
That's exactly right. So if you fall down on the job, workman's comp pays for it.
Gotcha.
As opposed to your insurance company or out of pocket.
Okay,
yeah,
I'm following.
Exactly. So that was a big question that we didn't quite understand. And then there was a second one specifically for firefighter training to create a facility. It's my understanding there isn't a specific designated firefighter mm-hmm. training facility. Representative DeMoris out of Anaconda, who's a retired firefighter, introduced a bill. It had a $5 million price tag on it. But it was to build a facility to train firefighters. Okay. And most states, it's my understanding, most states have their own, and we want to keep folks in state and not have to send them out of state to train them.
That makes sense. Is that $5 million price tag high? Is it average? Like, is that a lot of money to the governor, or do we have things that are significantly more expensive that he's cool with?
Depends on who you talk to.
Okay.
It depends on who you talk to. I'm guessing that our current administration, our current governor, is prioritizing income tax reduction.
Interesting.
For our highest. I mean, I'm well aware that his goal is to continue to decrease mm-hmm. income tax.
Okay.
Which is a tough one on our working mm-hmm. families and our middle class. Because that benefits the more wealthy people.
Okay.
But that's a whole nother topic.
Yep, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's all right. But I think that everything, I wonder if everything he sees and the reason for all of these vetoes is he's looking through that lens.
Mm, okay.
He's in his second administration, his second term of mm-hmm. his administration.
So he's termed out.
three, two, one. He's in the second term of his administration, so he's not worried about re-election.
Sure.
So I have concerns for what could come down the pike next legislative session.
Gotcha.
Senator Chris Pope introduced a bill supporting our clean and healthful environment promise that we have in our Constitution.
Yep.
And basically it encourages and allows people to use solar, and which would also support, potentially support, more reasonable energy bills.
Mm-hmm.
And that one went through both House and Senate, and the governor vetoed that one. So I'll be really curious to watch that one. It sounded like that had some strong support.
Yeah.
Now, another bill that was a big surprise, I'll be honest. Senator Boldman had a bill supporting veterans and allowing veterans who had 80% disability to qualify to be a part of this disabled veterans property tax program.
Okay.
And relatively low impact on as far as the financial, the fiscal note.
Sure.
And financial impact on the state and potential high impact for these disabled veterans.
Absolutely.
And there was a veto there. And that is, you know, a heartbreaking one for all of us who support veterans, and especially veterans who are disabled and trying to make ends meet.
I mean, it just feels like a giant smack in the face. Like, you sign up, you serve your country, and then you come back and your state government just completely disregards you because Jim Forte was the one who raised property taxes in the first place.
And coming back with some of these disabilities that we cannot fathom is, it's just hard to understand.
Yeah.
Representative Marilyn Marler, who's just an environmental champion, she introduced a bill to phase out styrofoam, which is environmentally unhealthy.
Sure. That makes sense to me.
And that passed both House and Senate, and sure enough, there was a veto there.
Wait a minute. This is the one with his weird video.
Yeah.
If you guys want a laugh, it's worth looking it up. On his social media page, he posted this video a couple of weeks ago, maybe months at this point, of him drinking out of a styrofoam cup that said veto. And the whole time he's just talking about how hot coffee is better in a styrofoam cup than it is in anything else. I personally prefer my coffee without the side of plastic. But if you want to see him look like a clown, it's a really good video.
Representative Paul Tuss introduced a bill addressing hearing aid coverage.
Okay.
So insurance companies would be required to cover hearing aids.
Sure.
As well as other medical issues. And right now they're required to cover children.
Okay.
But after, once you hit adulthood, that's not covered necessarily.
And that includes when you get older and you become a senior, right?
That's right. Or anyone who needs hearing aids.
Okay.
So, and those hearing aids can be very spendy.
I believe that.
So that one passed through the House and Senate. And I don't imagine, I don't know, but I don't imagine it had much of a fiscal note to the state if it was just requiring insurance companies to cover that. So unsure why. I want to point out, oftentimes the reason in that veto letter, the reason is fiscal responsibility,
sure,
that, you know, appropriate fund use of taxpayer dollars, which is the governor's job.
True.
Is to keep this budget sound. I will also say that finance and claims is a committee in the Senate, and appropriations is the equivalent committee in the House. Mm-hmm. And those two committees work hand in hand, usually with the governor's office. And okay. in this case, it's all Republican. Mm-hmm. So with the governor's office and the budget director, who happens to be a former legislator.
Okay.
And chair of Finance and Claims Committee. Okay. So they're all very well aware. And my understanding is that those legislators, and I was one of them too, we didn't want rampant spending.
No.
It's not like, and those chairs and vice chairs and committee members were paying close attention to the revenue and expected revenue that was coming into the state. We got reports mm-hmm. quarterly on what we expect from the Department of Revenue, on what was expected, so we could base the budget on these forecasts.
Okay.
So this excuse that continues to come out from the governor's office, mm-hmm. that it's fiscal responsibility, I don't buy it.
All of that makes a lot of sense, and honestly, I learned quite a bit there. But I just, and I know that we might never get to see the letter or anything like that, but I just, what could the reason even possibly be?
Oh, it's public access. And we'll talk about that as well, the information availability.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. We'll save that one for the end. But that's true. And sometimes it might make some sense. But we have 150 people in the legislature uh-huh. who have been processing this bill, listening to public testimony, speaking with other stakeholders, and have taken all these things into consideration. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal when we have these vetoes.
I feel like we have a lot of vetoes this year. Is this a standard number of vetoes? Is this a lot? Is this not really any? What does this compare to as to like previous sessions?
It's feeling like a lot.
Okay.
We still are waiting for more bills.
How?
To be signed by the governor. So it's an interesting thing. The governor basically has 2 weeks to sign
okay.
a bill. But that's once it's put on his desk.
Mm. There, so it's not 2 weeks from the end of the session.
No. And, okay. And these bills, and this might be something that we could be looking at as a potential for future legislation, for future legislators, this might be something that needs to be addressed. I'll mm-hmm. be real honest.
Okay.
Is it goes to, it, and if you go to the website and you track a bill, mm-hmm. oftentimes people quit tracking a bill once it passes third reading on the, let me go back. When you track a bill, mm-hmm. often people quit tracking a bill after it passes third reading.
Guilty as charged.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It has a number of steps. And I'll just remind folks, when a legislator has an idea for a bill, I'm just going to back it up a little bit here.
Okay.
I work with a drafter in a legislative services. And they work with me in drafting the bill. They might have input if I ask them. They might have input of, well, you know, Utah or Washington State or Delaware or some other state has done this and they do it this way. Mm-hmm. If you are interested, or the National Conference of State Legislators, lots of information. Sometimes lobbyists want to get involved.
Oh boy.
So, and that's a whole other story too, about access to information about what lobbyists helped. That information was blocked three sessions ago, that all of a sudden we could not see what lobbyists had been helping draft bills.
Hmm.
Which
feels sneaky and
feels
gross.
A little bit like it's a lack of transparency, and there are laws, strict laws against that. But that's neither here nor there. So you draft up your bill. You get any co-sponsors you want to sign on, or you don't have to. And then there's a primary sponsor and the co-sponsors if you want. And then you put that in the hopper. And then it goes into first reading, and then it goes into a hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And if it makes it out of that committee, Then it goes to second reading where there's a debate on the floor. And then if it passes second reading on the floor, it goes to third reading where there is no debate. And those are, when we go through third reading, it goes boom, boom, boom. And you're acting fast on okay. each bill. And then if it passes third reading, it goes to the other chamber where it has the same experience.
Does the whole thing all over again.
Does the whole thing all over again. If it's not amended, then it goes to the governor's office.
Okay. But.
But.
There's always
first, it has to take a couple of steps in legislative services to have it ready to go to the governor's office. And then it sits on the speaker's desk or the president's desk. And there's no clarified time limit of how long a bill can sit there.
And what do the speaker and the president have to do? Do they just have to sign it?
They just have to sign off on it.
That's it.
Yeah.
They have to sign the piece of paper.
That's right.
Okay.
So that we've seen significant stretched out hiccups, so to speak. That's a that's what a stretched out hiccup sounds like. And so it, we're seeing bills right now hitting the governor's office. And what did we signy die? Well, I don't remember
the
day.
End of April?
Yeah. Last day of April?
April 30th, maybe?
Yeah. So that's all of May and much of June. 2 months is a long time for those bills to be kind of floating. So that's the process of a bill.
Legislature 101 with Shannon O'Brien.
Yeah, yeah.
I know you were in, like, full-blown teacher mode right now, but you're missing a couple of vetoes. Do you want to get back to those?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to share with you Mary Cafaro, Representative Mary Cafaro, who's been in the House, Senate, and the House, champion for health care in general and Medicaid, had a bill that was vetoed that would just establish a fund to ensure for Medicaid recipients who qualified, if for whatever reason the Medicaid fund was insufficient at any given time, there was this special fund that could shift into gear when needed.
Like a rainy day fund?
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
And the governor vetoed that bill.
Now, let me make sure I'm following this. So if Medicaid money was to run out for whatever reason, this rainy day fund would backfill to pay for Medicaid.
Yeah.
So I would say hypothetically, but it's not hypothetically, it's reality. If the feds cut Medicaid, if Congress passes the big beautiful bill, and we see these dramatic cuts to Medicaid, that would have been a safety net, no?
Correct.
Okay.
As I understand it, yes.
I don't understand why he seems to be intent on making life harder for everyone except his billionaire friends. And it shows in the way that he speaks about things and does interviews and things like that. But also your actions speak so much louder than any interview you could ever give. And you're sitting here vetoing rainy day funds for Medicaid when so much of the state depends on it. You're vetoing hearing aid coverage for seniors. Things like that. I don't understand what you think you're doing because it's not serving the people of Montana.
I've said before, and I strongly believe, that the governor, but also so many people, are out of touch. And the understanding of the cycle of poverty.
Yeah.
And what life is like for the middle class as well. The shrinking middle class. But what it really means, and I'm not exaggerating with having three jobs. And I'm not talking necessarily about people who are living in extreme poverty. You know, we've talked about school teachers.
Yeah.
Who are being offered $35,000 to $40,000 a year who have one or two additional jobs. After being exhausted. Being a teacher.
Yeah.
Second to parenting. It's a tough job if you're doing it well. If you're doing it well. And I just think that so many lawmakers are out of I guess the biggest concern is not just being out of touch, because I know that I'm out of touch, but I know that I know I'm out of touch.
And there's a difference there, I think.
I think so too. And I think it's when we look at our children and knowing that our children are growing up in a different day and age now than when we did. A really different, and
yeah,
your perspective on life. Yeah. You don't have to be quite so
quick. I wasn't so sassy, I'm sorry.
But I think constantly acknowledging that my reality, how I see things, you know, my perspective, my paradigm, whatever you want to call it, is different than yours, and then certainly with people who are living in poverty or just barely above the poverty line. Think about, I want to shout from the mountaintops, think about what it would be like making $40,000 a year.
Right.
And raising children on that. And, and child care is going to be $2,000 for two kids. It's $1,000 a kid.
A month.
A month. If you can find it. Yeah. If you can find it. And half of the parents in this area in Montana cannot find it. And I will tell you, Jonathan Carlin, Representative Jonathan Carlin, has a child care. He had a couple of child care bills. And I'm concerned. Those are ones that the governor hasn't signed yet. And I'm really, really worried about those. And it's the old adage of these people need to pick themselves up by the bootstraps on the one hand. And on the other hand is this idea of trickle-down economics. And if we give more money to the wealthy, they'll hire the poor people at a living wage.
Probably not.
To improve their lives. So, again, I digress. So, let's wrap up with our last bill that I want
to
talk about.
All right, I've been ready to go about this one all day.
Representative Ed Staffman, House Bill 271, I think it is, looks at the concept of executive privilege.
Okay.
And that bill ensured access to documents and emails and information that citizens need to have the right to know what's going on in the governor's office.
Right.
What those conversations are about.
Can you explain what executive privilege is?
Executive privilege is very simple, that the governor or the executive branch withholds information for the good of the public.
Okay.
So it's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
If you go too far down that.
Okay.
So sometimes this sounds naive, but sometimes it makes me feel like, oh, you cute little child, this is just information you don't need to know.
Yeah.
And especially when they're dealing with taxpayer dollars.
Yep.
And our public safety and our education and our incarceration. And now there might be private information of people who are incarcerated or public employees or some of those things that are not appropriate for public use. But some of those things are, could be scary. Quite honest, could be not acceptable.
So let me make sure I'm tracking this. Representative Staffman wrote a bill that basically said, hey, Gov, you gotta listen to the law. And the governor said, no, I don't, and vetoed it? Am I understanding this correctly? I know that's very, like, cut and dry, but that feels like essentially the base of it.
That's essentially the base of it. The governor gets to decide in this case. We'll see what happens in court.
Is it going to court?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. But we'll see what would happen in court here. And this is the case in many laws. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the challenge with the Republican Party right now is they're trying to pass bills and rely too heavily on the courts, because mm-hmm. they're passing bills that are completely and totally unconstitutional.
Right.
And they know that.
Uh-huh.
And they will say, well, we'll just let the courts decide that.
I think one really important point about them writing all of these unconstitutional bills knowingly and just letting it go to court, having it be part of their plan, that costs a ton of money. Every single time we have to hash out a bill in court, it costs taxpayers so much money. I'm not sure what the exact number is, but it is way more than we should be paying when we could just, you know, not write unconstitutional bills.
It's hard to exactly quantify what that number is.
Okay.
I've been digging deep to find out that number.
Mm-hmm.
We know it's certainly in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. When we are calculating time and effort of the Attorney General's staff
mm-hmm.
and contracts that go out to different firms on the East Coast, for example. So lowball, hundreds of thousands of dollars, well over a million, if not more. But that was approved by the legislature, those funds. For voter suppression, for example.
Okay, this is what I've been looking for. Thanks for putting this on hand, because I don't know this off the top of my head. But I did go to journalism school. And one of the things you learn in J school is this concept of a right to know law in Montana.
Yes.
It's right here in the Constitution. I'm going to read it to you and then I'm going to explain it. It says Section 9, right to know. No person shall be deprived of the right to examine documents or to observe the deliberations of all public bodies or agencies of state government and its subdivisions, except in cases in which the demand of individual privacy clearly exceeds the merits of public disclosure. Basically, what that means is the public gets to know what the government is doing. They get to see documents. They get all of the access unless it is an issue of individual privacy. So you couldn't call up the governor's office and be like, I would like to know where the governor is going to dinner tonight. That's probably individual privacy. But you could call and say, hi, I would like to see the veto letter for X, Y, and Z.
Sure, absolutely.
And so that is the goal of this bill, is to just uphold this concept, is that the governor is accountable to the people.
I would go as far as saying, and I'd like to see any notes, any correspondence via email
mm-hmm.
about this bill in particular, who was a part of that decision making,
yeah,
and what the process might have been. And those emails should be archived and not used by Signal or other forms of that communication should be public.
It just makes me nervous, because what are you hiding? If this is already the law and you're like, no, thank you, what are you hiding? What is it that you don't want us to find out that you have running around that office?
Yeah. So the plug here is pay attention.
Yep.
Know what's going on. Stay tuned. Because more will be happening at the federal level, at the state level, and certainly at the local level. And get involved. Use your voice.
Shannon, what's the number one rule of politics?
You show up. Number one rule. You show up.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if you don't feel like you know what your role is, you show up. And the more times you show up, the more you'll and the more people you talk to, the more you'll be able to find what your role might be. Because we need you.
Shannon, your voice is so incredibly important in Montana politics, and it has been an absolute pleasure and an honor to do this podcast with you, and I'm going to miss you very much. I'm very excited to see what comes your way next. But for everyone listening, you will not have to listen to just me talk. I promise I will not subject you to that. One of my coworkers, Andy Nelson, he's the former executive director of LGBT Montana, and he's currently on staff as the Blue Bench Associate for the Montana Democratic Party. He's going to be joining me from here on out, so make sure you join us next week.
You'll love Andy. He's fabulous, and stay tuned. And again, thank you, thank you, thank you. This too shall pass, but it'll pass better with your voice and staying active. All right, thanks.
Bye.